I am Ting Ng, and this is the Parents in Tech Podcast. In this episode, I speak to Daniel and Michelle, husband and wife, co-founders of Nimbus Group, an office and home cleaning service provider. They are parents to a daughter aged 9. Inspired by their parenting experiences, Daniel and Michelle branched out of office facility services to start a new business unit, Nimbus Homes, to support parents through house cleaning, babysitting, and other essential home services. In my conversation with the both of them, we talk about what it's like to work together as husband and wife, their parenting styles, and building a business to solve your own problems. Hey Daniel, hey Michelle, welcome to the Parents in Tech Podcast. Really excited to have you on here today. To begin with, could you tell us a bit more about your family?
Yeah, so my name is Daniel. It's my wife Michelle. We met shortly after I started Nimbus, which is my startup. And Michelle when I met her, she was a single parent. So I have a stepdaughter and she's 9, and that's our family basically.
Awesome. And we'll get into that in a bit. But first, I know both of you work together. Now, how is it like husband and wife to work together in the same company?
You want to go?
So we've had multiple attempts at working together very transparently. I think the first time round, we kind of stepped on each other's toes quite a lot. And, you know, I think working directly is always challenging, especially when you have to report to one to the other person. So in our second attempt, which went a lot better, we kind of just worked on different areas of the company. And I think that reduced a lot of conflicts while also still keeping all the good aspects of working together, like spending more time together, being able to understand each other's experiences more. Yeah, without like getting into each other's way and crossfire.
Okay, so I want to unpack this a little. What was different the second time as compared to the first time? You said the split. Like, tell me a bit more. What does the split look like in terms of the division of roles and responsibilities?
Yeah, so just to give you some context, Nimbus was founded by myself, and we basically do commercial and residential office and home cleaning and other facility services. So when I started the business, obviously being in a young company, you need all the help you can get. So when I met Michelle and when we got married, I told her to help me out with the business. At that point in time, we were mainly serving commercial clients like offices, and I just needed help with sales, which Michelle said was rightly so, that we were basically directly involved in the same KPIs, because I was also the founder and CEO. So revenue is my big target, and she was helping me do sales and new sales and all that kind of thing, which meant a lot of crossfire in terms of the fact that basically I had a lot of inputs on what she was doing. Yep. And that didn't go so well, in the sense that, because, you know, couples, when you all work together, you get more sensitive over criticisms or feedback, etc. And that was why, you know, we mentioned that the first attempt did not go so well. I think the second attempt was a lot better, because as the business grew, we also expanded into the home services. This was during COVID, where people stopped going to the office, and we saw a need to pivot and deliver service to the homes to keep our workers employed. So our housekeeping team started to run during COVID, and that was when I needed fresh perspective on how to run the business from a consumer lens, from what a home requires. So when we started experimenting with housekeeping, and the fact that Michelle had background, you know, with our daughter, she's raised a kid before, and we saw a lot of scope to provide other services besides cleaning, like babysitting or like elder care or like moving, etc. I felt that she had a more stronger instinct and insights there, which is where she started to run the consumer side of things on the product and the services, and that helped, because then we didn't overlap and her insights, etc., was more relevant for the customer base. And that's how we've been running the two business.
Got it. It sounds like it's really about having the clarity on where the roles are, and really helps that. But you know, one of the things that when I speak to people, and I myself also actually aspire to be in your shoes one day, to run a business together with my wife. But I think one of the biggest concerns is just how
you know, there are challenges that you face at home. There are challenges you face as a founder at work, right? And you sort of like, how do you think about mixing them together? I mean, a case in point is that, of course, right? As with any couples, there are times when there's friction, there's conflict. And then imagine bringing that to the workplace. I guess that's the concept, the concept that most people have, whether it's the right or wrong one. I would love to hear from you guys, right? Like on how that happens, right? Because at home, yeah, they're just good days and bad days, as with any relationship, anything with staying together. But then now you got to bring that, pretty much both of you are going to the same workplace, so to speak. So I'd love to hear about how you manage that dynamic.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we try to do a lot is that we, and of course sometimes we fail, is we don't talk about work at home. I think the first attempt when we tried it out, there was just a lot of confluence and mixing of work and life. Until the point where Michelle started telling me that this is too much. Don't talk about work now. It's 7 a.m. and we're trying to exercise. I think that cognizance on separating it is important, because if you bring too much of work into the home, every dinner conversation and morning walks, etc., starts to become this giant work talk, right? And it can be very, well, demoralizing for your partner sometimes if she just wants to de-stress. So I think we got more cognizant of it, and we are getting better at separating that. And I think that helps, right, Michelle?
Yes, I think some simple methods we use is really trying to frame it in a work versus personal time. So it can be things like the time of the day, right? We try to avoid talking about work maybe like before 9 a.m. And also if you want to have a serious work conversation or like giving feedback, serious feedback to each other, we make it a point to sit down in a meeting room, you know, and have a proper conversation instead of like having it over breakfast or while trying to do some chores or something. So I think framing it in the right context, making it a serious sit-down work talk at the right time of day, it leads to better separation between work and personal life.
Hmm. Yeah. So as the founder of the business, and you're right, that Qing Yuan, that most of your viewers and also yourself, we're all thinking of building, you know, big companies or businesses, but the hardest part in a startup is getting off the ground, and talent is a big part of it. Like, you cannot find good enough talent to work in your business, right? So I think at some point you must realize that your family and all the help you can get is an asset. And I think that helped me to become less like kind of less, more chill on the general fact that, you know, at least you got help, at least you got talent working on it. Michelle is of course a talent, because she's also, you know, like very capable. And I start to realize that, look, if we're going to quarrel and all that, it doesn't help the business. But one thing that we actively try to manage now is that, of course, when we started out and now we've grown to the home space and we're getting bigger and bigger and we're able to hire more employees, we actually right now make a more informed and aware decision to actually make Michelle less operational day to day, because we've got new hires and it just makes more sense that she's more advisory, more less involved in the day to day operation, and just being rewarded with the fact that the business is now pretty good and she can do things that she really wants to, whether it be a dream job, or recently she managed to take part in a competition that she really wants to do. That is, I think, is the part that we try to work out, because as founder, you realize that it's still your baby, but
yes,
the baby, as the baby matures into a teenager and all that, yeah, it can slowly take care of itself and it doesn't need, you know, that much involvement from both parties in that case, and it avoids quarrels.
Yep. Yeah, makes sense. Let's maybe also sit right on the relevant note of work-life balance, right? As a founder, especially at the start, I'm sure it was pretty much no work-life balance, right? Firefighting and everything. It sounds like, and I'm glad to hear that Nimbus is at a stage where that has definitely improved, but keen to also hear that, right? Because like, how do you keep yourselves check and balance to make sure that you take the rest that you need and you're there for your family?
I think it's very challenging at the start. I think it's inevitable that you have to get past that stage of, you know, dedicating your whole life to something. Even at the start, when I joined, I think it was also a lot busier. There were a lot of things to develop, a lot of things to grow, especially when we're launching new services like babysitting and the home services. It was definitely very busy. And balancing that with a child, of course, it's difficult. I think that we rely heavily on each other as well. So we try to share responsibilities. For example, there's 2 days that we send our daughter to swimming. So I take one day and he takes one day. And sometimes, you know, we have to lean on our parents, and of course, family is a very great help, even if not directly in the business, but also, you know, just to support family life. I think that as the business matures a little bit, it's a bit easier to step away when needed and, you know, take a breather, have a better work-life balance. But ultimately, I think it's inevitable that at the start, you know, there is a period of where you have to put in your all and suffer through it. But it does get better.
Got it. And I have to ask, is a bit of a sidebar question, because you said earlier that Nimbus moved from commercial to residential, right? Or like retail. And that got me thinking, doesn't that create a lot more emergency situations, so to speak, right? Because I feel like for commercial, it's straightforward. When people, you know, the services are provided generally during office hours, offices are closed during weekends and all. But as also a customer of Nimbus Homes, when I, let's say, use a babysitter or get someone to clean, like it's almost 24/7, right?
Yes.
And weekends, things do happen. You're just in the business of that. Yeah. How has the experience been actually, like going from, say, commercial to really getting into people's homes?
Yeah. So I think the pivot to homes came about when, just to give some context, we mainly provide a service to help the best leading world brand build the most inspiring offices. And that was the vision, right? To help these brands, you know, build nice, swanky offices and maintain them well and take care of all the employees. But COVID hit, and that was a crisis which affected the commercial more so than the homes, because people are allowed to stay at home, but they're not allowed to come to the office. And from that crisis born, you know, innovation and scrambling, that we have to go to where the customers are. And it is a very personal space. And it means that, like you're right, Sinan, that you need 7 days a week support. Because weekends as well, our housekeepers there, we don't provide 24/7 housekeeping services, but we provide them 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., 10 p.m., right? So we have slots available all across. And you're right that at the start, there is no work-life balance, because we had to mend the phones, we had to take care of that customer experience, and we had to swap the phone lines around with staff. But I think to your point on work-life balance and general building of business, I think you and I both kind of familiar with the fact that we have to build as business owner systems rather than business that is heavily, heavily reliant on peculiar people. So what I mean by that is that I've always thought about businesses as something that needs to be systematized. I think if you read The E-Myth Revisited, that's a great book by Michael Gerber, is that, you know, you need to build processes and systems. While it depends on people, it's not necessarily anybody can come in and learn how to do it, right? So whilst we were building our customer support tech and processes on what to do, what to say, how do we do refunds, how do we promote a service, we document those things down. And then from there, we build more structure towards it. And that's how we started to hire people to then solve those challenges along the way. And then as the business grows, you are able to hire people to help you. And that's when your work-life balance starts to come in. So I think it's important for founders to acknowledge that, because if a founder is basically the one inside the business providing the service, basically there's no work-life balance, right? And there is basically no system. It's just you. And I think actively, when you build a business, you have to think about the fact that the company needs to run whether or not you get hit by a bus. And then from that perspective, how do you build an operating menu or documentation? I'm sure you've done this a lot of times in your previous work, right? As an operations guy, like how do you create processes where people can learn and get up to speed in 1 week and do the work that you need them to do? And that makes the operations, whether it's a service business or a tech business, systems based and not just completely people reliant. And that's what we did that helped us to achieve a better work-life balance than what was originally at the start, and allows Michelle to then free up her time to do now the things that she wants to do, travel, go competition, partake in the business whenever she wants, because there is a system in place and there are people in place doing those jobs. So yeah.
Got it. Thanks for sharing that, Daniel. Michelle, I have heard this competition thing being mentioned a few times. Like, tell us more about what this hobby, this passion is of yours.
So in the daytime, I work in Nimbus. At night, I am a pole dance instructor. So there was a pole dance competition just a few weeks back, actually, in early May. And I wanted to go for it because it was on my bucket list of things to do before I die, perhaps. So I took a little bit of time off. I worked part-time and I trained for it and went for the competition.
Very nice, very nice. That's awesome. Now, I want to also come back to what you mentioned, both of you mentioned earlier on, right? Which is the whole getting together and also the part where basically it's integrating existing family in together. Yeah, maybe tell me a bit more about that process, right? That, and what was that journey like for Daniel, for you to interact not just with Michelle, but also your daughter, and also Michelle for your daughter to meet Daniel. So love to hear from both perspectives. Either of you can go first.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's important as a single parent to ensure stability in relationships for my child. So initially, you know, only when we felt like we were getting quite serious, then I did the introductions, because I don't think it's good to have too many figures float in and out of, you know, a child's life. So when we're getting serious, I introduced her to Daniel. And I think that initially she was not very welcoming, because I mean, she has seen a couple of other men who perhaps, you know, left too soon after a short while. But I think after a while, they really warmed up to each other. I think it really helps that Daniel is a very good father figure. He's definitely the fun parent. And he has introduced her to things that are essential to any childhood, like Disney movies.
Just
what
general
else?
Play.
So, yeah, theme parks,
yeah.
Things like that, that maybe I'm not fun enough to do.
No, so we when we met, yeah, we knew that we would have to tackle this very important relationship at some point, and it was important, like Michelle said, to have a degree of confidence in each other before we, you know, get familiar with our daughter as well and try to assimilate her, right? So I think you're right, at the start there was a bit of like, who's this guy? And, you know, it's a stranger.
Is he staying?
So, is he staying? And then there's a lot of, the kind of frown. You can see the child frowning, you know, when you first met. But you do what you need to do to be consistent, to have fun, yes. But consistent, I think, is key. And I think also the fact that she's a really well-behaved girl, I think that is also big help to me, to be honest with you. I think if it's a rebellious child, it might have been a different story, but her personality as well, Camilla, is very
easygoing.
Quite easygoing, quite pleasant. So that helped. And the fact that she was, I think when I met her, she was around five or six.
Hmm.
So it's a good age. I think I've heard from single parents that have met kids that were like 9 or 10.
Hmm.
It's a lot harder. Like, it's harder for the child to be affectionate with you already, you know, at like 10 or 11 years old.
Yep.
So I think we were lucky and blessed that, you know, she was at an okay age, you know, where she's still young and you can still develop this bond where, you know, they can still be like, okay, you know, I can kiss daddy goodnight, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
So that's good. But it depends on the age. And
we're lucky
that it was early.
If I may say something also slightly controversial, I feel that...
Go for it.
You know, she's a girl and Daniel is a guy. Like, I think it's a lot harder for the same gender to create that affection,
right,
in my opinion. So I think it always helps to have the opposite, especially for girls and men. Like, there is just more affection both ways. Like, it's easier to love a cute little girl.
Well, as a father to two daughters, I can attest to that. But I also want to talk about parenting styles, right? Like, Michelle, you have been a parent for 4 to 5 years before... before introducing Daniel, whereas Daniel, for you, it's almost like you jump. It's like a jump start, right? It's like you just jump in right away. There's no ramp. You're just into it. So let's maybe talk a bit about that. I think Michelle, from your point of view, would love to hear about how you kind of align parenting styles with Daniel. And for Daniel, love to hear how you just dive right in, right? It's like, you know how they say for founders, you jump off the cliff, then you assemble the plane on the way down. I feel like that's a bit like your story in parenting. So, you know, having gone through that, what kind of advice would you give?
I think it helps that we are already quite aligned to begin with in our general values and therefore also in parenting. I think that we believe in things like reasoning things out. We don't believe in you know, just like, it's like waving the cane around all the time, but we still believe in discipline and being strict, but like firm, but fair with children. So it was not very difficult to align. And I think it definitely helps, because when you see your partner deal with children, you also kind of understand who they are as a person. And that can also you know, reflect on your own relationship with a partner. So I think it helps. It definitely enhanced our own relationship through looking at each other's parenting styles. Yeah, but in general, I would say that we try to be open-minded, and we try to be, you know, modern parents. We don't force them to, we don't force Camellia to do piano, ballet, the traditional set of Chinese parent things. Mm-hmm. And we try to grow her other diverse interests. Mm. Like, she actually likes artistic swimming, which is very niche sport. But we still try to, you know, make sure that she does her best. So we always try to say it's about doing your best. It's not about, you know, they're always getting first or getting full marks, but it's important to be able to do your best.
For me, it's like when you come into a situation where your partner is already a mother, right? And she's already been doing certain set roles. For my perspective is, yes, we align on values and all that. But for me, it's like, as a true partner, you're trying to complement where potential gaps are, right? So, of course, father figure is one. But I think more importantly, we also took stock of where are certain things that maybe, you know, Michelle has not been able to do when she's the only sole parent, right? And so what I tried to do is to add value in those areas. So, for example, like Michelle said, the just going out and having more fun is one. But I think the other things are also like, certain values that for me, I care a lot about the values that we impart to children. And I thought that in that domain, I felt that I can contribute, you know, a lot more. And so we discuss and say that, you know, I'm quite okay with how you dress her, feed her, or send where generally the schools, these are fine, but I would like to, you know, play a big role in shaping her moral values. Right. So those are how I think as a so-called outsider, when I came in, I tried to add value in that area. So yeah, maybe it's an entrepreneurial lens, right? Like you try to look at where the gaps are, and then you try to propose how I can better fit in the structure.
Yep.
And I try to consult Michelle as well. The other thing is, my advice is that when you, not the, like yeah, I'm a stepfather, right? So when you come in with a child, it is very difficult to speak from a authoritarian perspective, like, you should do this, you should do that. Because firstly, they may not recognize your authority. Secondly, it's just basically me telling you what to do. And a lot of the techniques that I try to do, given I run a higher lot of people, right? One of the things that I learned a lot and it's very important is the way we try to approach the person is important. So I tell you that you must do this, you need to do this, versus I'm trying to understand you. I'm trying to understand why you're behaving like that. And then, how does that make you or me feel? And how I think you could, you know, try, basically more of trying to get the person to be more self-directed or to realize that, oh, I shouldn't do this, was important for me, especially at the start. Because you can't go in and basically, you know, tell you what to do, right? You really have to kind of go from the perspective of, I want to understand you. I want to understand what makes you happy, what makes you sad, why, and then go from there. So that's really something that I also think I brought to Michelle in that way, right? Like trying to, instead of dictating to the child, you must do this versus why it's important, right? So
yep.
So that's really one of the ways that we try to parent actively.
Makes sense. How old is your daughter, singular. How old is your daughter now?
She's 9 this year.
9 years. Okay, so that means primary 3, right?
Yes.
Now, love to hear a bit more about the transition to primary school, academics and all. I know it's very different from perhaps the time when we were going through school, but what's your take on schooling, on grades, and I guess in a couple of years' time, PSLE?
Yeah, he's in this is the gifted year streaming year for primary 3, right? So you can see a lot of kids going through this kiasu parent mode where I think in general, kids are really smart nowadays, and for sure because of the technology available, of the stuff that they are reading online. But at the same time, competition is also very intense. And I think what we try to do is just try to cultivate her inherent motivation to learn. She's pretty bright, but we're not sure whether, you know, she where she'll be streamed. But I would say objectively, I think she's pretty smart. It's just that she makes a lot of careless mistakes. So those are the things that we try to, like you say, instead of scolding her, we try to reason with her and tell her like why careless mistakes are very frustrating from our point of view, because you know how to do it, but you just you know, leave the question blank, or you just don't add properly and then you get it wrong, right? And we try to give her parallels, like when she's frustrated doing her art because she wrote the wrong spelling, right? And say like, this is exactly what careless mistakes feels like to you, right? And to us. So I think our point of view is always to develop the intrinsic love for learning rather than to force. And I think that's been our philosophy. That's why we try to sign up for a breadth of lessons, but not commit to them at the start, long-term classes, until we get a sense that this is something she wants to do. So Michelle spoke a bit about artistic swimming. She started off with looking at a YouTube video and got very intrigued by what it was. We went for a trial lesson. She came back saying, this is amazing. I want to do this again. And you can see it's genuine. And so we did that. Versus, let's say, piano, where we tried and then it was like okay. I think I would like it. But then you don't see her practicing, even though you kind of give her those tools, right?
Yep.
You don't see her actively in it. So we got to a certain point where we said that, okay, there's sufficient theory and knowledge, but she's really not that into it. Maybe yep. We try to go somewhere else. So recently we're trying debate.
Yeah. Okay.
This really amazing world-class debater.
Yeah.
His name is Ashish. And you can see that, you know, that from the feedback of the child, and that's really how we try to steer the direction of the child, right? Keeping it more like, I want to do this.
Yeah. Yeah.
What I want to do.
Yeah.
I think one thing to add is that being millennials, and of course we took a bit of a different path doing our own business rather than, you know, being climbing the corporate ladder, I think we are more open to different life paths. And I think this reflects in how we think about academics and grades. Because even though I would say that we probably still submit a bit to the kiasu parent stereotype, you know, where we demand as good grades as they can possibly get and everything, I think we do realize that there's a lot of areas that children can excel in and perhaps even, you know, use it as a career path in the future. And we're not limited to just being good in school. Yeah, so I think it's important, especially in this digital age where there's a lot more paths open to us in across a lot of different platforms to make money, to have a career, to make a living, that we explore different interests and not just limit ourselves to, you know, the English, math.
Yeah, I'm not sure about what you feel as well, Tina, because we all went through the Singapore system, right? And I think it's the world is changing quite fast, and there is so many things, right? You're talking about AI, you're talking about people's ability to learn online is so strong. Because our system feels very optimized for like getting to a good so-called good school.
Yep. Yeah.
You just don't know whether this is relevant,
you
know, in the next like 10 years if what they're studying is just completely irrelevant, right? So and so many things are now being displaced, right? So you really don't know whether... Yeah, so it's something we struggle with as well when we think about the system, but we just keep focused to the fact that we want her to be intrinsically motivated to learn, to want to read, to want to acquire knowledge in whatever form she's motivated in, including sports or including debates, for example, right?
Yep.
Then let that organically steer her path and then we mold it in that direction. And may not be an academic path at the end of the day if it doesn't accord with it. Yep. I think that's fine, right? As long as there's this motivation to learn. What do you think?
So here's a fun thought experiment that just came out as you were sharing that, because I fully agree. Say 10 or even 20 years from now, would you bring your daughter into the business?
I think I would if you look at her aptitude to do business. For now, we don't see signs of entrepreneurship. She's more fixated about, oh, does this, you know, if I learn this, you know, I want to work for somebody. So I'm not sure, but of course we would like it if, I would like it personally as a founder that, you know, my business has continuity. But my job as a founder is to build a business in such a way where it's, like I told you, systems-based. The success for me is that it doesn't need the founder to be around for the business to thrive, to grow. It's able to hire its good people that are, you know, it's not a family business, it just runs, right? So that's always been the goal, and I think we are on our way to kind of building a pretty good independent team. That's always been the goal. So whether or not my children wants to take on my business is something I don't want to impose on them, but it would be good, of course, if there is an appetite for business in the industry I'm in, which is also something that's not very sexy, and we'll talk more about that at some point, I guess. But I care a lot about social impact. I care a lot about hiring people that makes a difference in their lives. They may not care about that, and that's fine. I just think that I don't want to impose my business on them. But of course, I'll be delighted if they share similar vision or ideas to grow on it, right? That would be best, because then you can keep compounding your business in a way that is like internal. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's you shouldn't, I don't feel like we should like impose this on people. Mm.
For sure, for sure. Michelle, any thoughts on your side to add of bringing your daughter into the business?
I think it's a good business. It's definitely very fulfilling and rewarding to work in, seeing the impact that we have on blue-collar workers. I think it also makes people, like, it made me very open-minded, because I realized that all these blue-collar work has a lot of value. And I think these are very good values to impart to people as they work in the business. So I have no objections whatsoever. But as Daniel mentioned, I think it's definitely important to look at people's personalities, because I don't think old way of me, like foisting your business onto the oldest child necessarily works in this day and age. Mm. I think that it's important that, you know, children want to take over the business and want to and have a passion to work in it.
Oh, but for sure, when she's legally allowed to work, we would make her do some cleaning jobs. So yep. Just to share with you, when I started the business, and I still do, right, I would clean. And I would say that it's a really good experience from the perspective of, A, you really learn a lot about humility, you learn a lot about service to others, yep. You really learn about how hard it takes to earn money, and how you're trading time off for money, right? And
yep.
I think these are values that honestly a child could benefit from. I think from an education perspective and from solving my manpower perspective, I think this helps, but it wouldn't impose her to take over the business, right? And it helps that she's actually quite organized. She also showed, we teach her to make her own bed, and she's very religious about keeping her room clean.
Wow.
So that there are signs that she's quite organized and she likes to like clean stuff. And
so she can
that's
be a good cleaner.
Yeah, she should be, because I think regardless of whether you're a good cleaner or not, it's a very humbling experience, right? When you clean someone's toilet, and you kind of just go through that day, you realize how hard it is to earn money, how hard is it to what sacrifice means. These are the things that I think serves as a good foundation for someone when they grow up and achieve greater things if they can. Because I think we shouldn't lose our roots when we, you know, fly higher, right? And I think that's something at least this business has given me a lot, and I'm very thankful for that. And I didn't expect that when I started this business, but it has given me so much in terms of that kind of life lesson. And yeah. So you don't see us at least bragging, you don't see us, you know, like humble bragging a lot. Like we think that this service actually, you know, give good values to our workers, to ourselves, to our children. So for sure, right? I think it's definitely good to do some form of service. Helps the child to grow and appreciate their parents better a bit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's really inspiring, right? Because it's not just about giving your daughter, should she come in, just like a nice cushy job, a GM role right away, but really just for her to understand like the realities of the business. And I think, like you said, that's so real, right? Because I think for both of you, you understand that you are in the business, you built it from ground up. But I think, yeah, I think really just giving her the exposure that there's very diverse backgrounds out there, that's so valuable.
I think any family run business, when they want to bring in their family as well, I think usually the sensible approach at least, is not to parachute to the top straight away. I've known examples of this, and it doesn't work well, right? Because basically you then have this problem of middle management and ground staff not respecting the fact that your legitimacy is not merited, right? Even though it's a family-run business. And I think meritocracy being a very core value to our society, to my company, it's very important that people must see that, you know, this, even though this person is the son or daughter or related, they are equally willing to learn and do a 360 and progress from there. Because I think it also helps the person better. If you parachute him straight away as a manager,
yeah,
I think you just have create a lot of second order problems from managing a business this way.
Yeah, definitely. Look, Dan, Michelle, this has been a really, really enjoyable conversation. To wrap up our time, what's the one thing that you would have told yourself, let's say you had a time machine, to go back and tell the moment you became a parent, right? So for Daniel, for you, that was 4 to 5 years ago. For Michelle, that was 9 years ago. What would you say to him or her respectively?
I think for me, what I want to probably emphasize and stress more again is more empathy to the child's kind of feelings and go harder at that. And less directive in terms of, oh, you need to do this, you need to do that. or even though I told you that I think I do that a bit, I think more can be done from that perspective, because you don't want the child to say that you fail to understand me. I think that's very important. I wish that I would, make more actively do that in the future with if we have more kids in the future, more of trying to really understand the child perspective and building from there, rather than it being I'm a parent, I tell you to do X. So I think that's one thing that I learned a lot, because now that she's older, Camellia also tells me things like, oh, I feel that, I want to go shopping with my friends, not you. And I say, why is it? Because they understand me more, or they listen to me. So these are feedback that I take very seriously. And I say, she doesn't feel hurt, and I need to probably listen to her more, or really feel like make her feel that I'm actually taking her advice and her inputs. So that's something that I'm actively trying to correct now, and probably advice that I'll give to myself if I had a time machine.
Love it.
I think for me, one advice, something that I know now that probably I didn't know when I first had Camellia, was that, we should maybe let the child go, and you just can't control a child all that much. I think a lot of parents forget this, especially at the younger ages. You can, because you do control most of their lives, and until maybe about, P1 stage, then I think you start to see it slipping away from you. And I think that's perfectly normal, because they are coming to their own as people. And I think it's kind of similar to what Daniel said. They have their own ideas, which may not always resonate with you. They have their own preferences. For example, Camellia is really into Taylor Swift now, and I absolutely hate Taylor Swift. And that's just something that we will never agree on. And even though it makes me a little bit sad that I have to listen to Taylor Swift every day, I'm glad that she's coming into her own and she's finding her own path. So even though sometimes the paths may not necessarily be what us as parents envision or hope for the child, even, I think it's fine. I think that most people, if brought up well with good values, they eventually find their own way and they land on their feet most of the time.
Yeah, so patience is important as well, right? Just letting them become
and find themselves.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, that's advice that definitely I am taking for myself. So thank you also for that. Dan, Michelle, it's been such an enjoyable time to speak with you. It's not often that I get both father and mother on the podcast, and especially a couple that works together and is building a business together. You are the first of that. Yeah, to the rest of our audience, for them who are curious about Nimbus Homes, what would you say? How would you introduce what Nimbus Homes can do for them? I am a happy customer, so I can vouch, but I think it's always better for you to share.
Yeah, so basically Nimbus Homes is it's our Nimbus brand that services the house, and it does. Basically, the idea is that we want to provide a good housekeeping, babysitting, elder care, all the home services that probably people don't have time to do after a busy day. And basically, we want to provide good service for the end consumer to free up their time. But also at the same time, for us, it's more than a cleaning service. It's more than a service. It's about giving job opportunities as well to people that are really working hard to do better for themselves. So it could be someone, a worker that is has escaped a war-torn country that wants to earn a better living here. It could also be people in our society that feels that they've been very undervalued by, their resume, and they are trying to do a respectful and dignified job. And I think that that's really what we care about. So that's really our mission. And we have a pretty updated Google review. So please check us out at nimbushomes.com, or you can just Google Nimbus Homes. You'll see our service standards there. And yeah, I think our app has a good promo code that we would recommend all parents in tech to use. And after this podcast, we'll also create a parents in tech promo code. So parents in tech, no spacing, would get you a 10% discount of our site. So we'll create that after this podcast.
Awesome. More freebies. I love it. I might use it myself too. All right, Dan and Michelle, thank you so much for taking time out for joining us on this show, and such a joy to speak with you today.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the Parents in Tech podcast with me, your host, Tingen. We hope you were inspired on how to raise kids and build companies. To catch up on earlier episodes or stay updated with upcoming ones, head over to www.parents.fm to join our community of parents in tech. There, you can also drop me a question, idea, feedback, or suggestion. Once again,
The website is www.parents.fm. That's all for this episode, folks. See you next time.